Coming up on today's show,
put down the phone and go experience a concert, go experience a play, go take a walk through a park and just take that in. Get off your earbuds, put the phone somewhere else, and just experience life in full Technicolor 3D.
Welcome to another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment, featuring interviews with guests who are having success in entertainment, primarily music. I am Bruce Wozniak, proud member of the Recording Academy, talking to guests who are singers, songwriters, musicians, recording artists, and more from the worldwide music community. Get in touch with me by writing to podcast@nhte.net, or instead of email, you can DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account. Joining me today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New Jersey, my guest is a pop and jazz saxophonist, composer, producer, educator, and philanthropist whose newest album was released in February. His credits include performances alongside hip-hop icon Ja Rule, Motown legends The Four Tops, Latin Grammy-winning rock act Diamante Eléctrico, Billboard-charting trumpeter Cindy Bradley, and modern drummer Hall of Famer Bernard Pretty Purdy. In addition, he has served as the featured saxophonist on the series finale of NBC's Lipstick Jungle, starring Brooke Shields, headlined New York City's 4th of July fireworks spectacular, and performed at the nationally televised Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. On September 25, he will be performing at the Iridium in New York City. You have been hearing a song of his called Lullaby. Welcome to Now Hear This Entertainment, Nick Stefanacci.
Bruce, how's it going, man? So great to be here.
Yeah, thank you, Nick. Thank you. I appreciate you making time to talk with me today.
For sure, for sure.
Let's get started by having you share with the audience all about the song of yours that was just playing called Lullaby.
Yeah, so Lullaby is, like you said, on my latest release right here, right now. And it was just one of those songs that I wanted to write for my nieces. Hmm. Although they're a little bit older in age, I just wanted to write something for them, you know, to have kind of in the future. You know, I'm always thinking about them and just want them to be kind of safe and always feel in a place where they have no worries, you know, and they could dream and they could chase those dreams. And so Lullaby is just one of those, you know, easy summer songs, you know, just about living carefree and trying to find your dreams and chase those dreams. And it was just, you know, just an inspiration when I was in the middle of writing the album. I said, I gotta do something along these lines. And it came out really well. And actually, I mean, there's lyrics for the song, so I'm just trying to find, you know, the right vocalist to do a new release of that, you know, with the lyrics. Yeah.
So tell me this, when you decide I want to do a song for my nieces, both present as well as for them later on in life, how do you take that concept? How do you take that idea and say, okay, now that I know what I want to do and that I want to do something for them, where do I go with this? How do you decide, Nick, is this going to be a ballad? Is this going to be mid-tempo? Is this going to be a fast, fun song? What is your next step once you decide what you described for us?
Yeah, you know, if I'm writing from that perspective where I kind of have the idea of the song already in place, like, you know, so is the case with Lullaby, then it's, you know, thinking about what I want the song to mean for them. Mm. And again, you know, it's really a song where hopefully no matter where they are in their life, that they could put it on and just feel safe and feel the ability that their dreams are still alive and that they can go chase those dreams. And so, you know, what better, you know, scene or scenario could it be for chasing your dreams than a lullaby, you know, something to put you to sleep and bring ease to your life so you could find those dreams and go chase them.
Wow. I like that. Congratulations on Right Here, Right Now, which is the album that came out in February, your fifth studio album. You wrote, arranged, mixed, mastered, and produced the entire album yourself. What does total creative control look like day to day? And what did you learn about yourself in the process?
Man, you know, I'm a control freak, you know. I think you could understand that now. And so, you know, my previous albums, I've always had, you know, different mix engineers, different mastering engineers. And I always felt that the end product was good. It just wasn't good enough for what I wanted. And so I said, let me just do this from front to end and kind of do all of it and see what I could do. And it's, you know, it's a very busy process to do a full complete album, you know, from start to finish. But when you have the control over all the details, all the minutia, you know, even down to like the cover art, you know, I did that too.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, then you really can put together the package that you're trying to put out to the world. And I know, you know, every day of the week, there's so many singles released, you know, on streaming services that, you know, most likely not many people are going to listen to the album, but if they do stumble upon it and they do check it out from front to end and check out the cover art and all that stuff, hopefully it gives the message, you know, that I was aiming to give by putting it out there, you know, and that's kind of the idea behind it, you know, and not saying that I didn't like my previous albums and previous work that other people have done for me. This was just, you know, a step further in my process as a producer, just to kind of see it from all the way through.
Yeah, I wish this was a video podcast so people could see how emphatically I'm shaking my head yes as soon as you said. That doesn't mean I was unhappy, because I'm borderline pounding my fist on the recording console right now, insofar as I wanted to make clear to the audience, Nick did not say, I chose to do this myself because the guys before me and the other albums didn't do the best job. He did not say, this is going to be so much better because I'm going to do it myself. But where I'm going with this, Nick, is as much as you say, look, I can control everything from front to end, and I can take care of all of the different roles that need to be played. Was there any part of it where you did say to yourself, of course I'm striving for the best it can be, but if I'm unhappy with it, well, now I have no one to blame but myself?
Yeah, and that's what I love about it, you know, is that I can't go and say, oh man, I wish I would have told the mix engineer to do this, or I wish I would have asked the mastering engineer to bring this out more or something. You know, now the onus is on me, and I'm okay with that. I'm okay with having that weight on my shoulders, because, you know, at the end of the day, it's my art, it's my creativity, it's my brand. And so if people don't like it or they love it, I'm okay with either of it, because I know in my head as the artist and producer that I'm very happy with the outcome of it, you know, from front to back. So I can't, you know, I'll stand by it for a very long time.
Yeah, I got to say, my hat is really off to you, because I admire your willingness to step up and take the position that you just described, because whether it's intentional or not, I think it's just part of our human nature that if you're a recording artist, which I'm not, but if you're a recording artist and someone says, yeah, listen to the new album and insert criticism here, I think it's just our human nature where we're automatically programmed to go, yeah, you know, the engineer that I had, yeah, you know, the producer, and right away you assign blame somewhere else. And so here's a case of where I'm really admiring, Nick, the fact that you're saying, if people don't like it, you know, it's unfortunate. It's not what I want to hear, but I'm ready to hear it. It's okay. I got my big boy pants on.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, and that's just being very self-aware of who I am as an artist and where I am in my career. You know, earlier in my career, you know, I probably couldn't handle that pressure, you know, so I had other people doing those roles for me.
Yeah. And
it does alleviate it, you know, because like you said, you could easily just, you know, kind of pass the buck unintentionally. But I think all that I've done in my career and where I am as a person and my faith in, you know, the big guy upstairs, I'm okay with all of it, you know?
Yeah. And audience, if you are an aspiring performer and you're about to do your first recording project, EP, album, whatever it is, don't self-produce it. You got to go through the lessons of learning and trusting the pros that this is what they do. Go back to the interview that I did. Technically, I recorded it in April when I was in Las Vegas, but it came out in May with Daniel Keller.
Oh, cool.
And we did talk a lot about choosing a producer and why it's so important and what they do bring to the table. Nick, with 2026 being the year-long celebration of America 250, there have been different time capsule projects that we have been hearing about. And if we think of albums as time capsules, I'm interested in your philosophy that albums are not song collections, but snapshots of a life chapter. That's so cool. What chapter is right here, right now, capturing for you?
Yeah, you know, and I love that you framed it as a time capsule, you know, because that's really how I treat all of my projects. You know, again, we're in this age of streaming and this age of singles. They don't tell a complete story, right? You know, they either leave you wanting more or they leave you saying, okay, I can go check out another artist. But for me, you know, growing up, when I grew up, you know, in the 80s and 90s and playing music in the 90s and stuff like that, it was always an album, right? It was, that's what artists were releasing. You know, singles weren't part of the game. And for me, when I do my studying and my research and I go check out albums of great artists who I love, you know, it really is a time capsule of where they were in their career.
Mm.
And that's how I approach all of my albums, because they are significant to where I was in my life and what was going on and what that writing of those songs meant, you know? And so for me, this latest album right here, right now, is literally just the time for people to notice me. And I know, like, that sounds like really arrogant and really, really stubborn and full of myself. But I think it's just, you know, I've done all the work. I've done, you know, the side man. I've done everything I could. So now it's, you know, it's right here, right now. It's, you know, it's kind of like my time. That's just what I feel about it. And, you know, super happy with the entire project and just excited to see what comes next, you know?
Honestly, I don't think that's being full of yourself at all. I think it's very accurate, because you could ask somebody about an album that they put out 15 years ago and they're going to go, well, that's not who I am now. It doesn't mean, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed by that album. It's just, I was a different person back then. I was at a different walk in my life. I was at a different place in my artist career. And so, you know, it is a great title right here, right now, because this is a time capsule of Nick Stefanacci in, let's call it 2025/2026. So I support you on that. I didn't interpret it that way at all.
Oh, cool. Yeah, you know, yeah, I mean, music is just such a humbling life, you know, that I wouldn't know what else to do in this world if I didn't do music, you know, because it's just that pursuit and it really is that joy and that happiness when you either get to release something or you collaborate with someone or you perform somewhere. I mean, it's just something, it's just pure elation. And, you know, I never want to come off sounding, you know, that other way. You know, that's not who I am.
Yeah. Folks, I don't want to call this breaking news, but on the last two or three episodes of the podcast, I was talking about an opportunity for us to potentially meet out on the road in the second half of August. But I have since booked a trip even before that. I always report these on this show because of my strong desire to meet listeners face to face to say a personal thank you for making time to listen to Now Hear This Entertainment each week. Next week, Thursday, August 6th, I will fly to Los Angeles, where I will stay until flying out on the 12th back home to Tampa Bay. If you or someone you know are or will be in the Los Angeles area from August 6th to 12th, do get in touch. Email me through podcast@nhte.net or DM me through the @NowHearThisEntertainment Instagram account so we can make plans. I would love to say hello, take a picture, talk about the podcast, and get the opportunity to get to know you a bit and say a sincere thank you for listening to this podcast every week. I truly appreciate everyone who listens to the show, and I hope to maybe meet you out on the road. Nick, I remember driving around one time with one of my clients, a singer-songwriter, and no sooner did I turn on the radio in the car than did she ask me to turn it off because she had a song idea in her head. Similarly, you have a no outside influences writing process. How easy or difficult has it been for you to deliberately avoid listening to other music while creating, but also, how has that discipline helped shape your sound?
Oh my God, that's so funny. It's really hard to do, you know, because music is is everywhere, right? It's your alarm clock. It's as soon as you put on like the news in the morning or the television, it's background music, you know, for something that's on there. It's in the car if you're driving around. It's just so easy to put something on. It's in the shopping center if you're at the grocery store. It's background music. It's the elevator music.
Yeah, they even have gas. They even have music playing at the gas pumps these days, for Pete's sake.
Yeah, it's, you know, so music is intrusive everywhere. So it's really hard to do that. But when I'm in a real particular writing mode where I'm either trying to finish songs for a new album or something, I really try to limit that exposure, or I'll try to wake up and just write first thing in the morning. So I literally have no interference in what I'm trying to get down on paper. And, you know, for me, my ears are always working, you know, and I think that's just part of being a musician and a producer. So even though it may be background noise somewhere, there's a tickle or trinkle of that getting in my ear that may come out while I'm trying to write something. So I you know, I'm pretty cautious about that, but you know, it's inevitable. And I mean, that's the greatest thing about music, is that we all take from something we've heard in the past, right? And then we try to spin it a new way or add it to something else to make it sound fresh. You know, there really aren't, you know, new ideas out there, quote unquote, because there's only so many notes and there's only so many rhythmic possibilities to put those notes. So like other artists before me have said, it's a giant stew or a giant melting pot, and we all kind of take a little bit of it that we like, and then we add our own spice to it to make some new recipe. And that's the brilliant thing, because it gives you a chance to pay homage to those musicians and creators before you, while you're also trying to strive for something new. And that's kind of how I approach writing and producing.
You may not even realize it, Nick, but you actually just gave out a tip. Audience, if you are a songwriter and you have this problem of all this music that plays around you and you're struggling to be influenced, you could be someone that has a wife in the house, a girlfriend in the house, children in the house, and you say, well, how am I supposed to get my quiet time? Well, I love the idea that Nick just said, gets up in the morning and before he even starts the day and all the stimuli start coming to life, boom, that's when you start the writing. So Nick, whether you intended it or not, that's a good tip that you just gave.
Good. No. Hey, yeah, it's all about education, you know, and that's where my, you know, past being a teacher comes into play. It's always great to talk to people about the process and how you work and how they work, because you never know what you could pick up just to help yourself, you know. So that's a beautiful thing.
But you know, with the kind of music that you're creating, and so in getting back to me using the phrase helping shape your sound in that question that I asked you, if we circle back to the new album right here, right now, nowadays everyone is in such a hurry to be somewhere else rather than relax and soak in the moment. Your style, your genre of music, in my own personal opinion, is not something for those rushing around environments, but you are the artist. Describe for us the ideal listening environment. Tell us about mood, atmosphere, how you want people to experience this new album.
Oh man, you know, that's such a great way to put it. You know, it's definitely not an on the move album. You know, this is definitely something that you want to kind of take your time and ease yourself into. And it's funny, because I will say, you know, like the lead off track is Get Right Up, which is, you know, totally a James Brown inspired, you know, funky type jam song. So you do want to just get right up maybe and dance. But you want to sit back and kind of take your time listening through this album, you know, and I think the best thing is, you know, a beautiful, you know, sunny summer afternoon with maybe a glass of wine, just sitting back and enjoying, you know, maybe time with some company or family or loved ones, and just let it kind of simmer in the background, talk a little bit, listen a little bit, and just enjoy.
Yeah, and audience, I can't underscore enough the importance of what Nick is talking about, because if you're an artist and you ask someone, so what did you think of the album? And they go, Yeah, it was good. Well, wait a minute. You don't sound real convincing. What was going on? And they tell you, Well, you know, it was morning. I was rushing around. I was putting breakfast on the table for the kids, and it was playing in the background. But then my mom called, and, you know, grandma's got to ask how the kids are. They're not giving it their undivided attention. So, you know, you're not getting a fair opportunity for someone to really enjoy. And so, Nick, I love that description that you gave, summer afternoon, glass of wine. You know, that is a great setting to listen to right here, right now.
Yeah. That's so funny because it's so true trying to get people's undivided attention. You know, everything, this world is so fast paced and everyone is always moving 5,000 miles an hour. Once in a while, you have to just take some time for you and just let things chill out and simmer for a bit. And yeah, this is a great album for that experience.
I know you're laughing, and I'm not upset that you're laughing, but you know, I know that songwriters, Nick, always refer to their songs as their babies. So, I mean, this is something that you take great pride in. And if a parent introduces someone to their son or their daughter, and the person just kind of, yeah, hey, how you doing? And then later on, you know, what'd you think of her son? I don't know. I mean, he's all right. You know, if the parent heard that, they go, wait a minute, like, didn't you spend it? My son is adorable, and he's a little this. You know, it's the same thing with music. You know, well, you didn't really give my music the fair opportunity. And, you know, I don't know if you're going to come back to it now because you were listening to it in the wrong environment. And now maybe you've moved on to something else on your playlist.
Right. That's such a great, great analogy. I love that. But it's so true, you know, and I mean, could you imagine, you know, the first day of like kindergarten and you drop your son or daughter off at the school and the teacher says, yeah, come on in. Good to meet you. And they're like on their computer doing something else.
Yeah.
You would be horrified as a parent. So yeah, I appreciate that. I like that.
Yeah. A recurring topic in the music world these days, and even to some extent on the show, I guess, is collaborations. Tony Lindsay, Ozzy Melendez, and Miles Gilderdale all appear on your new album, Nick. How did those collaborations come together? And just talk about what each artist brought to the sessions.
Sure. You know, Ozzy is a lifelong friend that I've known for, oh my God, I would say maybe close to 20 years.
Wow.
And he was the trombonist with Mark Anthony for a very long time. And now he's the trombonist with Bruce Springsteen. And so Ozzy comes in once in a while and does some things for me. And he's just spectacular. He's a spectacular artist. And so he's actually doing all the trombone work on right here, right now. And then I said, you know, Ozzy, I got this song. It's like James Brown funky thing called Get Right Up. I want to do a trombone solo. And he said, yeah, send it to me. I'll shred a solo for you. And he did. He crushed it. So if you listen to the whole album, all the trombone work is Ozzy. And then, you know, the tenor sax work is one of my mentors, Frank Elmo, who played with everybody, you know, just like Ozzy, just a monster. And then the trumpet work is my friend Johnny Benedetti. And so they're just great horn players. And, you know, they come through when I ask, which is amazing. And then, you know, as I said earlier, you know, I like to pay respect and homage to the ones before me. And so I had this idea for Oye Como Va on the album. And if I ever do, you know, a cover song or something, I have to throw my own spice into it, you know, and do my own arrangement of it. Yeah, you know, I don't ever want to do a straight cover. I don't understand that to be, you know, as an artist, I don't understand that. You know, so, you know, I wrote a real cool little slick intro. And then I said, you know, man, I have to find a vocalist for this. And so I reached out to a friend of mine and I said, you know, I'm doing Oye Como Va. I want a vocal on it. And she said, I know the perfect person. And she knew Tony Lindsay. Tony was actually Santana's lead singer for about 20 years. So I got in touch with Tony and I said, Tony, man, I'm doing a version of Oye, but I want to do it different. And he said, you know, and I'm sure, and it wasn't on like video phone, but I'm sure his eyebrows raised and said, well, what do you mean you want to do it differently? You know, I've sang this song, you know, for 20 years over, you know, how many world tours, you know? And so I said, well, the first chorus, I don't want it to be Oye Como Va. Like, I don't want it to be the standard. I said, I kind of want you to like vocal leaf it a little bit and make, you know, kind of improv it a little bit. And he wasn't sure about it. So, you know, my role as a producer, then I said, well, all right, let me help you. So I went to my studio and I recorded some saxophone lines of how I think the vocalese could be.
Interesting.
And I said, Tony, can you kind of vocalese some of these lines as the first chorus? And so if you listen to Oye, the first chorus, it just sounds like him improvising the words rather than singing the traditional chorus.
Nice.
And then, obviously after that we get into more of the traditional sense. But he knocked it out of the park. It was fantastic. And then I said, I need a guitarist for Oye. I mean, come on, this is Santana. If there's not a guitar player, what am I doing here? And so Miles is the guitarist with Acoustic Alchemy. And I'm not sure if you know who they are,
but they are
one of the staples in the smooth jazz world for like 30 years. And Miles is such a gifted and wonderful person. So I reached out to Miles and said, hey man, I'm doing this. You want to throw something down for me? And he crushed it. Tony crushed it. And so then I tried to crush it at the end. But it's just one of those versions that worked really well on the album. And I tell you what, it's even more fun doing it live. I love playing this arrangement live. I usually do it at the end of my shows. And we just kind of let loose and just go wild. And it's a show closer, So
I'm
just excited about that.
Here's what I love about when you started that answer, you talked about Ozzy Melendez and you said, oh, he's been a friend for gosh, 20 years or so. And so audience, think about what a difference that is for an artist, for someone like Nick to say, I totally trust Ozzy. I've known him for 20 years or so. And I don't have to think twice. Is this going to come out okay? Understand that I'm not criticizing. I just want to educate you, audience, that if you're a recording artist, you're going in the studio for the first time, you don't have people like Ozzy Melendez in your life. The producer is going to say, that's okay. I got a guy that can do it for us. And that person will do a good job. But it's because you're just putting your faith and trust in the producer that, well, they don't want the project to fail. So I'm sure they'll get me someone good. As opposed to, I totally know this person. Like, I can vouch already. This is my choice. This is who I want doing this. And so, Nick, I love that for you, that you had all these people that you could call directly. You can call someone else and they'll go, oh, yeah, you need to get so-and-so. And you go, okay, do it.
Yeah, that's a lifetime of working and networking. And always being professional when you're out meeting people, it's really the little things in this industry that can either help you get in the door or slam the door in your face, and the little things from making sure you're dressed appropriately for the gig you're going to, making sure you're early enough for the gig you're going to, obviously knowing the music and being able to like actually play it. That's just a given, right? There's so many talented players out there. But it's the little business side of it that really will make people answer your call or make people, put your call on decline.
Yeah.
And I always, when I meet people, I always want them to answer my calls. And so it's just treating them with respect and being respectful of what the job you're there to do.
Love it. I am joined today on the Now Hear This Entertainment guest line from New Jersey by pop and jazz saxophonist, composer, producer, educator, and philanthropist Nick Stefanacci. Visit his official website at nickstefanaccimusic.com. I will have a link for it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. You have been hearing him talk about his newest album, Right Here, Right Now. His original music can be purchased, streamed, downloaded from the likes of iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music. Check your preferred online digital music retailer or streaming service. In the discography section of nickstefanaccimusic.com, you can quickly connect to Spotify for each of the albums shown there. Social media, look for logos, links for Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram at the top of his website. September 25, he will be performing at the Iridium in New York City. Keep up with Nick online for dates and locations so you can go see him perform live. I hope you listen to this podcast regularly. If you like Nick Stefanacci's music, you will also enjoy the interview from 2 weeks ago with Ion Zenka from the Grammy-nominated Dallas String Quartet, which bills itself as Where Bach Meets Bon Jovi and has charted at number one on Billboard. During that interview, episode 648, I was giving out a thank you for three coffees having been bought for me. This is in reference to buymeacoffee.com, which you hear me talking about a lot on this show. It is a fun online destination where we can meet, since all of you surely will not be in Los Angeles when I go there next week. You will see the messages that people have written to me, how many coffees they bought me, and the post that I wrote back to them. It is a nice way to show your support for this show. You can see all of what I am talking about by going to my podcast website, nhte.net, and then tap or click on the bright yellow Buy Me a Coffee button. And this is where I like to point out that this is not a sponsor. They are not paying me to talk about them. And in fact, they in all likelihood do not even know that I am talking about them. It is merely a way for us to feel a little more closely connected. Nick, shame on me. In the excitement of doing a deep dive into your new album, I did not even do the customary background setting, especially for those in the audience who are just being introduced to you for the first time. I have said twice now that you are calling in from New Jersey. Kind of ironic, since last week's guest, Hannah Andrea, spends most of her time there since she is attending Princeton University. But Nick, unlike her, you are a New Jersey native. I'm curious as to how your home state and the local scene shaped you early on and the degree of influence that it has had on your work.
Oh, man. Well, you know, Jersey's pretty famous for, you know, just producing entertainers, right? And I would say probably the first local entertainer I was introduced to would be, you know, sitting in my grandfather's van going to work sites with him. And he would, of course, be playing Sinatra. You know, so I don't know if you go any higher than Sinatra, you know, from Jersey. I mean, you have Count Basie, obviously, you know, Bruce and Bon Jovi and all of them. But I think Sinatra kind of set the bar for me, especially being, you know, Italian from North Jersey, you know, growing up in a typical North Jersey Italian family, you know, listening to Sinatra and just how he would deliver a melody. You know, and the best was, you know, Sinatra live at the Sands with Count Basie, and Quincy Jones did all the arranging on that album. You heard his live banter with the audience, right? Because that was live from the Sands. And it was just those interactions and that charm, you know, that he had with a live audience that I said, whoa, this is such a cool thing to do for a living. So, yeah, I think Sinatra really kind of did it for me. And then, you know, growing up in New Jersey with how strong music is in this part of the country, you know, my first band director was a monster upright jazz bassist, you know, studied with Eddie Gomez down at UMiami, and that was Chuck Sastre. And so, you know, he was my first band director in fourth grade, and he got me started on the saxophone. And then, yeah, when I got to the high school, he actually moved up to the high school to become the high school band director. And I mean, I think maybe from my junior year on, I spent, you know, every lunch with him, just eating in the band room and talking music, playing through tunes, you know, listening to music. So he was just a huge inspiration on my life. And then obviously, you know, my saxophone instructor, Frank Elmo, when I started studying with Frank in, I think it was sixth or seventh grade, I mean, oh my God, he just opened up my eyes to so much more that's out there. You know, in our culture, we're so overexposed to sports, right? That if you have someone to teach you that there's something else out there, it could really open up, you know, the possibilities to what you do with your life. I owe it to those guys, you know, for really kind of showing me the ropes and showing me how to be professional, how to be humble, how to be relentless about the chase. And yeah, it's so, yeah, growing up Jersey was a huge portion of who I am as an artist. And, you know, Jersey is an interesting place for sure. But I will totally embrace it, you know, because it is who I am and it's made me.
But I'm fascinated by, you started off the story by talking about your grandfather and the job site and Frank Sinatra. You know, it's one thing to be a kid and to admire your grandfather and say, oh, he's listening to Frank Sinatra. It's another to get older and say, I am in New Jersey, and you see Clarence Clemons playing for Bruce Springsteen, or, you know, you do start to have this broader view, and maybe it's over in Long Island, and oh, Billy Joel's got horns on a lot of his songs. And then even bigger than that, you go, well, Chicago, my gosh, look at them and the career that they're having with all these horn players. And you would think it would be really easy to say, okay, well, I'm kind of done with that young phase that was influenced by grandpa. I'm going to shift over and do pop music. I'm going to do rock music. So I admire that you know, everything you just described clearly set the path for you that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. I'm really happy with the music that I'm being influenced by, and this is the lane I'm going to go down.
Yeah, you know, it's just blessings, just so many blessings in my life, and to be exposed to that stuff early on and then have the chance to study music. I mean, oh my God, you know, how lucky is that? And then, you know, just to have these different, you know, mentors come into my life, right? Through just like random kind of exposure. If you can't see the blessings there, then you know, I don't know what to tell you. but yeah, I mean, Sinatra with Count Basie and Quincy, you know, those three, I you know, I don't know if there's any better than that, you know?
You mentioned before closing out with Oye Como Va. Since I have mentioned it a couple times now, let's talk about your September 25 date at the Iridium in New York City, one of the most storied jazz rooms in the country. What can fans expect from a live right here, right now set? And how do you translate a self-produced studio album to the stage?
Wow. Yeah, that show is going to be a lot of fun because I have a guest performer with me that night, and that is the one and only Jay Rowe, who is the pianist for Acoustic Alchemy. Mm. And so Jay will be joining me that night, and that's going to be a lot of fun in New York City in September. I can't wait for that one. But, you know, the shows are, they are roller coasters, you know? It's taking an audience on an audio ride. That's really what it is. You know, there won't be, you know, flashing lights and smoke and dancers like you see, you know, with, you know, like Taylor Swift or Beyonce. It's not that. It's, you know, this is definitely a night to grab a loved one, go get a glass of wine and just sit down and just be taken somewhere different. And you know, the set starts off with some fireworks and then we'll slow it down for a minute, you know, and then bring it back up. But it's just really, how can I take an audience member on a trip, you know? And that's really what I try to do as a live performer, is just relate to everybody. And, you know, it's interesting being an instrumentalist, right? Because there's no vocals, you know? So how do I connect with an audience through an instrument? And it's really how you approach and how you play every single note, you know? And that's why I think the influence that Miles Davis has on me as a player is really profound, because you could say a whole lot with one note, and then, you know, it's leaving that space to kind of let the audience wonder what's next or why, and then you kind of answer it, you know. That's kind of how I approach my live shows, is just take them somewhere and let them wanting to come back for more, you know?
Yeah, and obviously this is your own original music, but as recently as mid-June, I was on a cruise and I was sitting in a lounge with my wife, and the jazz band that was performing, they made it clear this is going to be Earth, Wind & Fire and Stevie Wonder music. So even though you knew the songs, you didn't know where they were going to go next with the arrangements and, like you said, from one note to the next. So it does kind of leave you, you know, in this happy state of wonder that really kind of pulls you in. And you know, as I once heard said, even time itself holds its breath. So I can imagine that you've done a great job of painting the picture for September 25 of what people can expect when they go that night.
Yeah, that's great. Even time takes a breath. I love that. But it's just trying to get people to forget about their worries for a little bit of time, you know, come out, have a great night, and then be entertained, because the band is great, you know, and then with Jay Rowe added to the mix is going to be a lot of fun. So I'm excited about that one.
Speaking of your live performances, tell us about both your new philanthropic concert series, Smooth Jazz for Heroes, as well as the sign off you close every show with.
Oh my God. I am so thankful that you mentioned that. Philanthropy has been part of my adult life, since my early 20s. And it's so interesting to me because I never thought I would be doing this as part of my life path. You know, for me growing up, philanthropy was always, you know, like some like really rich old people, you know, with way too much money. And so they just throw money around and you know, and do stuff, you know. But as I mentioned previously, my first music teacher, Chuck Sastre, we lost him when he was 49 years old to pulmonary fibrosis. And I was fresh out of college when I lost him. And that was the kickoff to my first philanthropic fundraiser event. And I was standing at the funeral home, you know, at the wake. The priest said, if anyone wanted to come up and speak, you know, now's the time to come up. And I had no idea that this was going to come out of my mouth. This was not pre-planned, but I walked up to the front, you know, I walked up to the front because Chuck just meant so much to me. And I started talking about his impact. And it just happened that the current director of William Patterson University, the jazz program, which is happens to be in my hometown, he was there at the funeral. And so I looked over to him and I said, Dr. Dempsey, I know we're going to host a fundraiser event at William Patterson to create a scholarship in Chuck's name to give out to high school seniors. And I kind of put him in a position where he couldn't say no. I mean, how do you say no at a funeral? And that was the jump off to philanthropy. And we did it, man. We did, I think we had 8 performers from Chuck's, you know, history of performing with various artists. I think we had 8 performers come that night and we raised over $20,000. And that scholarship is still being granted every end of the school year to a high school senior going on to study music. So
Bravo.
That was kind of the jump off to philanthropy. And then, you know, for me, it became a pursuit of passion because, you know, I realized over time that I've been so blessed with my ability to play music and the saxophone has taken me all over this world that if I can't figure out ways to help people who need it, I think personally that I'm missing the bigger picture of why I'm here, you know? And so, yeah, you know, years ago I put together the Promise Music Festival, which was a music festival working with CHOP, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and helping them fundraise for whatever needs they needed. You know, it wasn't for a particular cause. It was just, you know, if you need new bedding, let's fundraise, you know, or if you need, you know, whatever it was. And then COVID struck. And so, you know, that kind of put the ending of on that one for now. I will eventually get back to that because I think there's a lot more to do. But this, you know, quickly about Smooth Jazz for Heroes, and that's the new one that literally just started. And I launched it on July 4th, the 250th of this country. The way that has come about was my first week of freshman year at college was 9/11, and I was a freshman at Jersey City State. So we were directly across the water from the towers. We were outside, and I mean, the smoke billowing, I mean, everything. And that was the first week of freshman year of college. So it was, and that was a rude awakening. So that day has always lingered in my soul, you know? And like everyone from this area, we've, you know, basically everyone in this area was touched by that day, you know, losing someone, a relative, a friend, a family member, you know. And then Tunnel to Towers gets started, and oh my God, since they started, I've just been so impressed by that foundation and what they do. And I've been trying to figure out a way to connect it all, right? Connect the dots and do something impactful. And it just so happened that a couple of months ago, I was introduced to the general manager at the American Dream Mall in New Jersey, which is right outside like the sports complex in East Rutherford. And he introduced me to the new theater that they have at the mall, the Dream Live Theater. And I didn't even know that there was a theater in the mall, but I was introduced to them. And I went down there and checked it out, and the theater is gorgeous. And, you know, the location of it is just perfect because in the background, you see New York City. And so I said, okay, this location can work for something, right? And then, you know, by the grace of God, I actually had basically a direct connection to the Tunnel to Towers. And so I reached out to them and they put me in contact and they love the idea, Smooth Jazz for Heroes benefiting Tunnel to Towers. And so they're on board. They officially gave me, you know, the right to use the logo and all that stuff. And so Smooth Jazz for Heroes will be coming to New Jersey in 2027, May 15th of 2027 from the American Dream Mall. And a direct portion of our proceeds will be donated to Tunnel to Towers to to help all the military, the veterans, the first responders, their families, just help them and, you know, and let them know that, that people just appreciate them and love them for all that they do for this country. And so it's, like I said, it's taken a while for this to come together, but I feel that the pieces have finally lined up the right way, that this is going to be a big, impactful annual concert. So I'm excited for next year. You know, if there's anyone out there that has anyone in major corporations for sponsorships, obviously we're looking for sponsors for this program. You know, just so you could reach out through the website, smoothjazzforheroes.com. Let's just make something really impactful for all those people affected by that, that terrible day.
And what is the sign-off you close every show with?
So every show I say two things. I say, safe home, you know, please get home safe, and spread love. And I think those are two things that people need to be reminded about on a daily basis, because you never know what tomorrow is going to bring. You know, and getting home late after a show, it's not an easy thing. So safe home and spread love. And that's how I do it.
Nice. Nice. Let's have a little fun here. Back in the intro, I mentioned that your credits include performances alongside hip hop icon Ja Rule, Motown legends The Four Tops, serving as the featured saxophonist on the series finale of NBC's Lipstick Jungle, starring Brooke Shields. I will not repeat the whole list, but is there one true highlight, Nick, one fun story, one absolute great memory? And maybe it's not even one from the list that I read off at the start of the show that you can reminisce about for us?
Oh, man, yeah. Yeah, it's actually not on the list, which is crazy, because that list is pretty special. But I'll tell you about the first show that I ever played on, and how that just absolutely hooked me into the music world. So I was 15 or 16 at the time, and I had the opportunity to go sit in and perform with the one and only Derek Trucks from, you know, Tedeschi Trucks Band, the Allman Brothers. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. And so it was a school night. You know, my parents had to drive me because I was, you know, not of legal age. And Derek was performing all of his original music at the time. He's a couple years older than me, so he was probably like 19 or 20 or something like that. But he was doing all of his original music, and he was playing at this really great little jazz club in Teaneck, New Jersey, called Mexicali Rose. And so I had the chance to go sit in with him. So I went down there, and I mean, this is a fairy tale, because this is stuff that you hear about that, you know, it never really happens, right? This doesn't happen in real life. But I get there, and there is a line around the block. You know, this is stuff that you see in movies, right? The crowd is around the block. I said, oh my God. And so there I am, this young little, you know, nitwit or whatever with my saxophone. I go right up to the bouncer, and I tell the bouncer who I am, and he lets me and my parents in, you know, cutting the entire line, you know, not paying a cover charge, any of that stuff, right? And then I get to sit in and play with Derek, and I am so grateful that this was before the age of the iPhone and video phones, because, you know, I mean, honestly, I was probably terrible that night. I mean, I was, you know, I'm playing all of his original music that I didn't know. So I'm trying to pick it up on by ear and you know, keep up with them. So I'm very grateful that there is no like YouTube video of this or TikToks of this, you know, and so it kind of adds to the lore of Nick DeFinacci, right? If you were there, you saw it. If you weren't there, it didn't happen, I guess. And I think with how we videotape everything nowadays, it would be great to get back to those moments where you have to be there to see something, right? And I think that's kind of one of the bad sides of social media and all this technology is now people feel that they don't have to go out and see anything. They could just go on YouTube, go on TikTok and see it for 5 seconds and say, it is what it is. But you know, going back to that night with Derek Trucks, if you were in the audience, you saw it. If you weren't there, then it was just, you know, maybe a piece of my imagination the next day when I told you about it. But you know, that night hooked me on music, because I said, wow, I can go to a club, not wait online, not pay a cover charge, and get to play my saxophone. Like, who doesn't want to do this for the rest of their life?
So cool.
Yeah, and I was really spoiled that night because I thought, well, all right, cool. All I have to do is start my own band, write my own music, and get a show somewhere,
Yeah,
and
that's
people
all.
will show up.
That's all.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, how hard could that
Please
be?
drive ahead to the
You
second
know,
window.
right, exactly. So that's where it really kind of came together. I said, wow, this is really what I want to do, you know?
It reminds me of the old bit from one of Steve Martin's comedy albums where he's talking about you can be a millionaire and never pay taxes. And I know you're wondering, Steve, how can I be a millionaire and never pay taxes? And he says, well, I'm going to tell you. First, get $1 million now. It's like, oh, e easier said than done. Like, all I got to do is start a band. Oh, that's so cool. That's so cool. And you know what's really fitting about this, as I mentioned before about last week's guest, Hannah Andrea, who goes to Princeton. She had a song that we talked about and played at the end of that episode called Get Off Your Phone. So, it's resonating here 2 weeks in a row, this idea of, well, don't go looking for it on YouTube, because that's not what we are doing. And to mirror what she was talking about, I love your, especially audience, if you think of the ideal environment that Nick described for listening to his music, if you listen to intently to him describing what's going to happen on September 25, that is all about get off your phone. That is all about don't worry about the YouTube video. Like, be in the moment, soak in the music.
Right. You have to live life in the present, right? Putting up YouTube videos and all that stuff, it's great, it's wonderful. It's advertising and all that stuff. But if you're not there when it happens, you miss the magic, you
Yeah.
can't replicate that magic in an Instagram story,
Well, let's think about it this way. There's so many guests, and you can appreciate this, Nick. There's so many guests that come on the show that are songwriters that say, I just want people to feel something. That's their goal with their music. I just want people to feel something. And if you think about going to a performance, going to a concert, and you spend half the night behind your phone because you're trying to get these great videos for social media, which, by the way, are you ever going to really go back and watch those videos again? You're spending so much time, then you're losing out on that opportunity to feel something. You're missing a unique chance because when's the next time you're going to be able to go see that artist and get that feeling inside of you again instead of, yeah, I was filming it though. Like, I remember the song. No, you remember filming it. You remember the phone version of it. You don't remember, you're missing out on an opportunity there to really feel something inside that you can't get if your attention is divided. Should I do this one horizontal or should I do it vertical?
Right. No, I mean, it's so true. And it's so interesting because you think now, like, some of the biggest events going on, in this country are like these immersion events, right? Where people have to be forced to go be immersed in something. No, just put down your phone. Just put down your phone and go to Central Park and just be immersed in Central Park.
Love it.
Just, or go to a concert and be immersed in a concert. Like, these people are acting, I mean, the branding and marketing is brilliant. They're paying a fee to be told to pay attention. Like, that's, I mean, that's genius, but like you said, just put down the phone and go experience a concert, go experience a play, go take a walk through a park and just take that in. Get off your earbuds, put the phone somewhere else and just experience life in
Yeah.
full Technicolor 3D.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
We talked about you being New Jersey born and raised, and you have gone all the way to building an international career. As we get set to wind down, I would love if you could impart some wisdom on anyone in the audience who is an aspiring performer themselves and is trying to get some momentum for their career. You've given out some teaching moments already, but Nick, as we get ready to wrap this up, is there a lesson you have learned along the way that could serve as a big piece of advice?
Yeah, absolutely. I try to tell this to as many people who I talk to and as many people who ask. It's really simple. It's a one syllable word that starts with the letter Y and ends with the letter S. And it's say yes, right? It's just, if an opportunity arises, say yes for it. No matter what the opportunity is, and again, this is for anything in life, right? It's just not about being a musician or performer. It's about anything because you never know where the opportunity is going to take you. Like, for instance, just this past year, I said yes to go perform a festival in Madrid, Spain. The money wasn't great, but it was an opportunity, right? So then that opportunity has now led to the festival director asking me to go perform at the International Cultural Festival in Shanghai, China.
Whoa.
Yeah, I'll be going to China in October for two shows.
Whoa.
And then I'll be flying right back to Madrid for another couple shows
wow.
that they booked for me.
Oh.
And that's all because I said yes to this one thing, which didn't pay a lot of money. And I actually lost money because of the flight prices, you know. But if I didn't say yes to that, I would not be going to China in the fall. And so that's really that simple. It's just a one syllable word, and it's saying yes, because as soon as you say no, you close down that opportunity plus how many more that were going to come after that. Right. It's a trickle effect, right? It's a domino effect. And so when you say yes to something, yeah, that gig may be awful, or that job that you take may not be the right job for you, but you're going to end up meeting people along the way that could put you in a better position further on, you know?
Well, and make no mistake, it's not if I hadn't said yes to that, I wouldn't be going to China in October. It's if I hadn't said yes, I wouldn't be going to China in October, and then I wouldn't be going back to Europe after that.
Exactly right. It's a domino effect,
yeah.
Right? And it's such a simple word, and I think so many people have been hampered, you know, since COVID. They got so used to staying home and saying no to things, right? And again, it's like that immersion thing that we were just talking about. Say yes, go out, go meet people, go to a bar, go see a show you would never see, you know, and just be there, be present, and a lot of things can happen when you just show up. That's kind of the easiest lesson I could teach people.
Yeah, and there was a blog that I wrote on the website, I don't know, a good month or two ago, where you can't say not this time, because what's going to happen is you're going to get into this mode of, like you just said, you get so comfortable at home that you say, no, I deserve this night off. I deserve to have a night to do whatever I want, which is to sit and relax and watch Netflix or whatever. Well, go ahead and I don't want to say be selfish, but go ahead and think all about yourself instead of your career. And who knows what you might be passing up? Who knows might be in the audience that night, just like the experience that you just described. We are going to close today with another one of Nick's original songs, one called Midnight Affair. Before I let you go and we play that track, Nick, share with the audience first all about this one, if you would, please.
Oh, yeah. I love this track. This is totally, you know, like the quintessential Quincy Jones, Michael Jackson type shuffle, right? It's just a real nice shuffle, balladly type tempo. This idea of Midnight Affair is really about the chase. The chase you never get there. It's you know, so it's just kind of play on words. It's like this Midnight Affair, and you're kind of chasing through the streets for this thing. And you don't necessarily get there, but it's still an affair because you were still had, you know, other thoughts in mind, other intentions, right? That may have not been the best. And so that's kind of where it just becomes a little shady, you know, midnight. It's just one of those great songs that I'm, you know, super happy with how the horns played, you know, all the horn lines written throughout it. The feel is just great by like Eric Valentine on drums and Mel Brown on bass, and Carnell Harrell on keys, just you know, everything kind of just came together for this. And it's like I said, it's that quintessential, you know, like Quincy Jones shuffle type feel. And yes, it's one of my favorites off the new album. So I hope you guys enjoy it.
Very cool. Congratulations on the new album. Best of luck with the New York City show. Best of luck with the China and the Europe shows. Great to meet you, Nick. Thank you for making time to be on Now Hear This Entertainment.
Thank you so much for having me, Bruce. It was great, man.
My pleasure. My pleasure. Audience, with that, I will wrap up another new episode of Now Hear This Entertainment. My sincere thanks to pop and jazz saxophonist, composer, producer, educator, and philanthropist, Nick Stefanacci. Do visit his official website at nickstefanaccimusic.com. As I mentioned earlier, I will have a link for it on the show page for this episode on my podcast website, nhte.net. In fact, I will also put a link to the Smooth Jazz for Heroes website. You have heard him talk today about his newest album, his fifth studio album, titled Right Here, Right Now. His original music can be purchased, streamed, downloaded from the likes of iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music. I won't go through the whole list. Just check your preferred online digital music retailer or streaming service. In the discography section of NickStefanacciMusic.com, however, you can quickly connect to Spotify for each of the albums shown there. Social media. This morning, I followed Nick on Facebook and Instagram, and I know he would appreciate you doing the same. We did not get a chance to talk about his YouTube channel. He is approaching 12,000 subscribers on there. Go hit the subscribe button there and watch and like the videos on his channel. For that matter, tell Nick you heard him and his music on Now Hear This Entertainment. And remember, September 25, he will be performing at the Iridium in New York City. Keep up with Nick online for dates and locations so you can make plans to go see him perform live. That will do it for episode 650. Thanks ever so much for listening. I'll send you out today with another song from Nick Stefanacci. This is the one he just talked about. It's called Midnight Affair.